Well, hello everyone. As I'm sure you're aware by now, Mark Carney won the Canadian election. Not a surprise to me, although if you take a kind of slightly longer view, I do think it is something of an electoral miracle. Now, I do have my Canadian correspondent, Black Horse, who's made a very good video taking a realist view of what happened. But I do want to, just before I allow him to come in, there's a couple of things I think it's worth reminding ourselves. If you have a look at this graph here, you can see that was the moment that Justin Trudeau resigned. Now, look at how down and out the Liberal Party were, and look at where they ended up under Carney. It's a stunning victory for Carney, but also a stunning loss for the Conservatives over in Canada. Now, the reasons for Carney's victory to me are obvious. You know, it's not only the Trump factor, which is a huge factor in this election. You know, all the 51st state rhetoric basically united the country, you know, against Trump. But it's also the fact that Carney, who was persuaded by Tony Blair himself, went the full Blair playbook. You know, he put the woke away, if you want to put it that way, or he really toned down, you know, woke messaging versus the Trudeau kind of messaging. Or, you know, remember, Trudeau was like a poster child for wokeism. He presented himself in a really serious way. He kind of presented himself as a patriot, did all the Blair things, really. But I also think that he comes across as really, really serious and like he means business in his speeches. And I've just picked out two speeches I want you to watch before we bring Black Horse in, because I think if you haven't followed this election at all, it may be quite difficult to understand. Well, hold on a second. Are Canadians crazy? You know, right? They've had 10 years of Justin Trudeau and they vote Trudeau's party in again. How can this possibly be? How has Carney defied political gravity? Are Canadians just that kind of liberal and crazy, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, maybe some part of it is that. There are other parts of it too, as Black Horse will get into. But I think fundamentally, Carney just won the argument. He presented a better argument than his opponent. And I want to have a look at these two speeches here, because I've called the video, Carney's electoral miracle sparks new era in Canada. Okay, now that is not simply a clickbait title for this video. Listen to what he said. He's talking about an absolutely fundamental change in how Canada orientates itself towards America, how it views Americans, basically how it's going to go into the future. There are two speeches that really caught my eye. This is the first one. I'm going to play it in full because I think it's pretty stunning.
We are once again at one of those hinge moments of history. Our old relationship with the United States, a relationship based on steadily increasing integration, is over. The system of open global trade, anchored by the United States, a system that Canada has relied on since the Second World War, a system that, while not perfect, has helped deliver prosperity for a country for decades, is over. But it's also our new reality. We are over. We are over the shock of the American betrayal. But we should never forget the lessons.
But you're going to take us forward.
We have to look out for ourselves. And above all, we have to take care of each other. Yeah. When I sit down with President Trump, it will be to discuss the future economic and security relationship between two sovereign nations. And it will be with our full knowledge that we have many, many other options than the United States to build prosperity for all Canadians.
All right. So, I mean, he talked in really stark terms about American betrayal, right? I mean, I thought the language was, the rhetoric that Carney was employing was not only quite strong, but also I can see how this sort of speech helped to galvanize the nation behind him for this election. The other speech that caught my eye was this one that he gave, I think. That was on the election night, the first one. The second one, I think, was the day after. And this, again, struck this very serious tone, but also this tone of national Canadian self-assertion and Canadian autonomy, even, which is, I think is really interesting, given where Canada is, how it's positioned vis-a-vis America, and what it means for Trump's threats of 51st state, etc., because Carney is not backing down. Let's watch the second speech, and then I'll bring in Black Horse.
The old relationship we had with the United States, based on deepening integration of our economies and tight security and military cooperation, is over. What exactly the United States does next is unclear. But what is clear, is that we, as Canadians, have agency. We have power. We are masters in our own home. Nous sommes chez nous. We can control our destiny. We can give ourselves much more than any foreign government, including the United States, can ever take away. We can deal with this crisis best by building our strength right here at home. It will take hard work. It will take steady and focused determination from governments, from businesses, from labor, from Canadians. We will need to dramatically reduce our reliance on the United States. We will need to pivot our trade relationships elsewhere. And we will need to do things previously thought impossible at speeds we haven't seen in generations.
So, I mean, these are really strong words. They're strong, almost kind of nationalistic sounding words from someone who, let's face it, is an arch globalist, Mark Carney. But he sounds serious and he sounds like he means business. And, you know, I've called this before the Mark Carney paradox, because on paper, America has all the power here. America seems to have all the leverage in this relationship. It's got all the money. It's got the bigger army and so on. And yet Carney is striking this extremely defiant stance against Trump. And I just wonder, well, where can it go? Like, you know, essentially, if America doesn't invade Canada, I guess Carney can indefinitely do this, you know? I just find it really interesting. Anyway, let's bring in Black Horse now, who has a much more thorough breakdown of what went on in this election. I think it's a really interesting election for all sorts of things. I would describe it as a post-woke election. I mean, in my view, Keir Starmer is a post-woke figure in British politics. I know a lot of people don't agree with that. Carney certainly seems to be like the first post-woke liberal, you know, to really kind of win a big election like this as against the tide of populism. Very interesting indeed. All right, pick up a course at the academic agency and I will let Black Horse come in now.
Go.
Go.
Good day, I'm Bob McKay. What? As you can tell by my brother doing both parts of our theme, we got our old show back, eh?
Yeah.
2 minutes. Beauty, eh?
Good afternoon. This is the Black Horse, your Canadian correspondent. Canada had a federal election last night. This video is a political realist's guide to that election and its result. It will have three sections. First, what happened. Second, why it happened, understanding the results in more detail. Then finally, what's next for Canada. First, what happened. The Canadian election culminates a very impressive political comeback by Mark Carney. to lead what appeared to be a politically dead Liberal Party of Canada to a minority government. So if we rewind 5-6 months, the Conservative Party of Canada held a 25 percentage point advantage in the polls and looked to be slated for a massive majority government, historically large. In the intervening period, Justin Trudeau has resigned. Mark Carney has replaced him as leader and led the Liberal Party to an election victory. Mostly, it must be said, at the expense of the Socialist Party, the New Democratic Party. The government which has been elected in Canada is a Liberal minority, which can govern with support of either the NDP, the Socialist Party, or the Bloc Québécois, the Quebec Regional Company, or the Quebec Regional Party. It is important to note that this result was delivered on the back of substantially increased support for the Liberal Party of Canada among white older people. In demographics, in the 18 to 35 demographic, the Conservative Party won the substantial plurality of the vote. In the 55 plus demographic, the Liberal Party won an outright majority of voter support. This is a phenomenon which is accentuated when you break the voters down demographically. Another key thing that happened is both Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the Socialist Party, and Pierre Poilievre, the leader of the Conservative Party of Canada, lost in their respective ridings and will not have seats in the coming parliament. For Jagmeet Singh, the leader of the NDP, the Socialist Party in Canada, it will probably mean a leadership review, particularly as a result of the very poor performance of his party. And particularly, Jagmeet Singh holds his position based on the promise to deliver Sikh ethnic votes to the NDP. That's a promise which went largely unfulfilled last night. Pierre Poilievre will face an interesting set of dynamics. The minority government in Canada is unlikely to last a very long time. So the Conservative Party will want to have a leader with name recognition and with the party behind them in preparation to face another election. So he may survive as Conservative Party leader despite having lost his own seat, a formerly safe conservative seat that has been rendered not so as a consequence of some of the dynamics with older white Canadians and as a consequence of the replacement of its population over time. So let's understand the result a little better. How did this happen? Well, the first element of how this happened is Mark Carney's pivot on immigration and cultural issues. Those who have followed Canadian politics might remember that when Justin Trudeau came to power in 2015, he famously described Canada as a post-national state without any particular culture and not representative of any particular ethnic group. Here's Mark Carney during the election campaign.
The ceremony we just witnessed reflects the wonder of a country built on the bedrock of three peoples, Indigenous, French, and British. The office of the Governor General links us through the crown and across time to Canada's proud British heritage.
That kind of rhetoric, that kind of optics would have been completely inconceivable in Canada 5 years ago. Equally, Mark Carney, by promising to get Canadian immigration levels down to 400,000 and promising not to renew the over 5 million visas presently issued to temporary foreign workers in the country, is threatening both the largest reduction in new migration to Canada in Canadian history and also the largest return home initiative in Canadian history, both by substantial margins. Though it must be said, there's complete consensus in Canadian politics that immigration should come substantially down from the levels it was at during the Justin Trudeau period. And it is very likely that all parties that had a chance to be elected would have sent home a large proportion of the temporary foreign worker base in the country. So that's piece number one. Piece number two of the pivot is on green. Remember, Mark Carney is the founder of the Net Zero Banking Alliance, an organization explicitly dedicated to depriving the oil and gas industry of access to finance and therefore the ability to be developed. However, and is the architect of Canada's very, very aggressive carbon tax policy. Since becoming Prime Minister, Mark Carney has completely reversed this set of positions. He has canceled Canada's consumer carbon tax, which was one of the most punitive in the world. And the consumer has had an opportunity to see prices at the gas pump go down by 25 or 30% as a consequence of the end of the carbon tax, and to see their heating bills go down by, like, in some cases, 50, 55% as a consequence of the end of the consumer carbon tax. So with that sort of evidence in hand, and with this rhetoric that we're about to hear, he has pivoted Canada away from the Justin Trudeau era of extremely aggressive green policy. Let's hear what he has to say for himself.
It's about getting things done. It's about getting, yes, pipelines built across this country so that we can displace imports of foreign oil. It's about building out the energy infrastructure more broadly here in Alberta, which I would add would include projects such as the Pathways. It's about building energy corridors and trade corridors, including potentially up from here through to Nunavut. So we have additional deep water ports and opportunities there.
That's Mark Carney, founder of the Net Zero Banking Alliance, whose mandate was to deprive the oil and gas industry of investment, talking about all the investment that his government is going to make in order to bring oil and gas from Canada to market. Just a profound change. The third piece of this result is the Donald Trump effect. We could have chosen a lot of examples of the troubled relationship between Canada and the United States over the last few months, but I chose to call Donald Trump's truth on Election Day, in which he talks about the freeloading that Canada has been doing on the United States and how much better everything would be in Canada if Canada would only become the 51st state, how taxes would go down, how access to Canadian to U.S. markets would get better, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Canadian nationalism is deeply and historically tied with the Liberal Party of Canada. All of the symbols of the nation were constructed by that are presently part of the propaganda facade are intimately tied up with the Pearson government and the historical Liberal Party. Even the country's flag is originally designed to look like a Liberal Party campaign sign. So when you got a rally around the flag effect incited by the aggression of the United States, it is very predictable that that rally around the flag effect would accrue to the Liberal Party rather than the Conservative Party. But as we'll see later, primarily that rally around the flag effect accrued away from the ideological parties and towards the interest parties, which is kind of interesting in its own right. The last thing that is worth really unpacking here is that more so even than Mark Carney, the winner of last night's were the interest and regional parties, and the loser were all the ideological parties. So Canada has three parties that represent distinct elite classes and regional interests: the Liberal Party, representing the Laurentian elite in the corridor between Toronto and Montreal; the Conservative Party, representing the Western elite tied up with the oil and gas industry in Western Canada; the Bloc Québécois, representing the ethnic Quebecois people in French Canada. Each of those three parties performed very well last night. Canada also has a collection of ideological parties, the largest of which is the Socialist Party, the NDP, which in the previous election in 2021 got 17.7% of the vote, 25 seats. In this election, they got 6.3% of the vote and only 7 seats. One of the worst performances for that party in its history. The Green Party of Canada also received about half the votes that it received previously. The People's Party of Canada, which is a right-wing populist party led by Maxime Bernier, went from a little over 5% of the vote and almost breaking through in Beauce in Quebec to get a seat for Maxime Bernier to just under 1% of the vote and not being remotely close to breaking through in any particular riding, despite having lots of ideological fodder in their kind of very public campaign opposing mass immigration to the United States, mass immigration to Canada, a very unpopular policy in this country. So what's next? Where does that leave Canada? Well, we start with the non-political. Canada is in the midst of a very long, very poor period of economic performance. Over the past 10 years, it has been among the worst performing economies in the entire world, delivering over a 10-year period 0.6% economic GDP growth on a per capita basis. Just horrendous, horrendous performance during that period. Equally, a key element of Canada's economy, its resource extraction and export economy, centers around oil and gas, which are both at historically low price levels, as well equally the kind of industrial minerals part of Canada's economy centered around iron, nickel, and potash. These are all commodities that are suffering very badly in terms of price as a consequence of the global trade war. Over and above threats from the United States to impose tariffs targeting some of these commodities. At present, there are aluminum tariffs and steel tariffs imposed on Canada by the United States. All this adds up to, on the one side, poor natural economic performance coming from the poor international market for key goods produced in Canada, and likely poor future performance because many of the patronage-related policies that have delivered such poor economic performance to Canada over the last decade are likely to continue under a Carney government because of the need to reward the patronage networks on which he is dependent. So it's very likely that you're going to get very, very poor economic policy during this period and very poor natural economic performance out of Canada unless something unexpected happens. Equally, both the Canadian government and the Canadian consumer are historically indebted and historically large portions of their income are dedicated to making interest payments on debt that's already been taken out. At the federal level, this means that many of the spending promises from Mark Carney during the campaign, and there were lavish, large spending promises made, will either not happen or have the potential to incite a currency crisis. And the consumer economy is not much better. So we're in for a long, dark night of economic suffering unless something very unexpected happens in this country, which is going to make it very difficult for Mark Carney to govern effectively. Mark Carney has promised to reorient Canada geopolitically toward the European Union and toward China. It's worth noting here that over 90% of Canada's trade is with the United States. pivots towards China and towards the European Union sound good on paper, but the infrastructure to deliver goods to market to these markets both doesn't exist and is non-trivial to build. So it's very unlikely that in the short term these are moves that are likely to yield effective results for the Canadian government. And in the long term, these are moves toward geopolitical rivals of Washington that are likely to provoke retaliation against the Laurentian elite out of Washington in one way or another. Equally, within the Liberal Party itself, there is going to be a profound tension between the ideological leftists who will want the party to work with the NDP in order to bring socialist policy forward, and the sort of elite interests that sit behind Mark Carney, who would like to stabilize the country and will be drawn to drawing support from the Bloc Québécois in order to try to restabilize the country. This tension within the Liberal Party is going to make it very difficult for Mark Carney to hold on to power, and it's going to be an ongoing feature of Canadian politics over time. Equally, Carney achieved his electoral victory without substantial support in Alberta, Saskatchewan, Manitoba, or rural Ontario, the territory of the Western elite. Because he achieved power without support from these regions, the sense of Western alienation that has been a feature of Canadian, an increasing feature of Canadian politics for the last decade, is going to get worse rather than better. Carney's political formula, the Laurentian elite's political formula, depends on delivering money from Western Canada to their patronage networks and to Quebec. That formula is going to come under threat. The Western elite is very well organized and has already taken steps to try to put themselves in a position of better leverage in negotiating facing Ottawa, first through things like the Alberta Sovereignty Act and the Saskatchewan First Act, which are explicit legal precedents designed at nullification of unfavorable federal law. Explicitly designed with the economic interests of those regions in mind. Equally, the Alberta government has taken steps to withdraw the province from Canada Pension Plan, has taken steps towards an independent debt issuance system, an independent tax collection system, and towards expelling the RCMP in favor of a local police force, all of which put Alberta in a position to credibly threaten the Canadian government with either de facto or de jure separatism. Equally, the Western elite have leveraged the position of the United States to independently, or the grievances of the United States with Canada, to negotiate independently with the United States and to kind of play up the threat to annex part of the country. It's going to be very, very difficult for Mark Carney to deal with this dynamic, and it's going to be one of the defining challenges of his time as Prime Minister to try to pull the country back together and re-secure the power of the Laurentian elite. I am not optimistic at his ability about his ability to do this, especially not optimistic in a period where Canada will be under such economic strain. Thank you for your time and attention. I hope you learned something about the conditions of Canada, and may God help us all in trying to put this place back together. Enjoy your evening.
Canada originally was put together by two groups of people who didn't have much in common but didn't want to be American.
The line just popped into my head. A bunch of the boys was a whooping it up. And there I got my start.
We have had a flag. Flags can be changed. But flags cannot be imposed, the sacred symbols of a people's hopes and aspirations, by the simple, capricious, personal choice of a Prime Minister of Canada.
I have watched this country for half of my life from abroad, and we have turned complacency into just that, a national sport.
I am resolutely opposed to all innovation, all change, but I am determined to understand what's happening. I don't choose just to sit and let the juggernaut roll over me.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.